are back. Another episode of The Reporter's Corner. I'm one half of your co-host, Jared Rubato from the Bemidji Pioneer. With me is the other half of the co-host, Trent Singer from Sioux Falls Live. Trent, how are we doing today?
Doing well. Episode 14, and we are rolling on with another good one this week.
Yeah, and before we get into who we have on the show and everything we got into, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Bob Daniels,
friend of the pod,
episode 9's guest, Bob. Yep. Daniels. Yesterday it was announced that he is retiring after this season. 33 years, over 500 wins, one of the most illustrious college hockey coaching careers ever. And just an absolute gem of a person. I think Trent and I both heard that when we had him on the show. Trent, again, did one of my favorite the Rink Live stories, and it's, when that was a thing. And, it was just he's so many stories from Bob Williams. He's coached so many players that moved on to play very, very high-level pro hockey. And, just – an outstanding coaching career, and it's fun to see him get his flowers yesterday.
Yeah, we've had three head coaches on the show this season, and it was pretty fitting that we had Bob on in the first half. We had him over the Thanksgiving break, we had some great stories. I mean, we really got to hear some good ones from him, and it's funny because when I did my story with him, I got so many good ones, and I just remember thinking, I bet he's got so many more. And sure enough, when we had him on the pod, there was like three or four more that he told. And I think he told some of the same ones, but those are great. It's always like when you hear those stories from somebody like Bob Daniels, it's like you want to hear him again and again and again, and it's like it never gets old. So hats off to Bob Daniels for just a great coaching career. He has meant everything to that school. Wish them the best of luck moving forward, but I wish him first and foremost the best of luck in retirement. He's certainly earned it.
The story he told of the pranking the freshman through like Canadian customs
is so good,
and I'm glad he told that story.
I brought it up to Taylor Nelson too when I saw him, and I think I like mentioned like three words. I was like, man, he told this story, and he he was like, are you talking about the freshman on the bus? And I'm like, yep, that's exactly it. He's like, oh yeah, that's a good one. That's a classic.
Oh yeah. But we did have our third head coach on the show today from the CCHA. And it is the second first year, in quotes, first year head coach for Dennis Williams of Bowling Green. And it's coming off of an interesting weekend out in Ohio between Bowling Green and Bemidji State, and whatever in the world that split was. Trent, you can go down the rundown of what we talked about with Dennis, and it was another really, really great chat.
It was an awesome interview. A guy who's full of stories as well too, because he's been around pretty much every coaching rank that you can imagine in hockey, maybe besides the NHL, which I think he even mentioned that he had an opportunity there at one point. So it was cool. It was cool to just get to chat with him about kind of where Bowling Green is so far this season. They're currently, I believe right now, still tied for third, in the CCHA standings with Michigan Tech after that 3-point weekend last weekend against Bemidji. So they got one of the best goaltenders in the country. We talked a little bit about Christian Stover and how hot he's been playing. And then we talked about his playing career. He grew up in Stratford, Ontario, played for the Colletons in the MWJHL, for all of you who I'm sure are so familiar with junior hockey in Canada. He had a 120-point season his last season in juniors, with 196 penalty minutes. So we talked a little bit about that, just kind of what his career was like growing up, and then obviously gotten into his coaching ranks. And like I said, he bounced around in so many places, was a GA in Bowling Green, went to Utica for a year as an assistant, 3 years at Newman College, and then made his way back to Bowling Green. And then he really had a pretty illustrious junior coaching career that spanned more than a decade. And that includes a stint in the NHL for 3 years, a stint in the USHL for a team that's now defunct in Bloomington, And then 7 years with the Everett Silvertips before he came here to Bowling Green. And that was clearly his biggest stepping stone as a coach. And then we also talked a little bit about his World Junior stint. He was a coach for the World Juniors team and got to coach some huge names, Logan Stankoven and Connor Bedard among them. And then, you know, obviously we talked about coming back to BG and this full circle moment for him as a head coach. And you know, the Falcons are off to a great start this season. You know, he is certainly hit the pipelines pretty hard too, as a recruiter. I believe by Jared's count, seven players from the CHL that he has going into next year. He's just kind of, since that pipeline opened up, he has been, I think, the coach in college hockey more than any other coach that's taken advantage of it. I'm really interested to see what this Bowling Green team looks like next year, you know, considering what they're going to be bringing in. And if you do remember, when he got here to Bowling Green, didn't lose a single player to the portal, retained his entire coaching staff as well. It's been a really, really interesting kind of change from the previous coach, Ty Eigner, to him, whereas they kind of picked up where they left off in a lot of ways. And at the same time, it's like they didn't experience that turnover that so many of these programs do when they go through a coaching change. So a great chat with Dennis Williams. I think you guys will really enjoy this. We talked about so many different things, and I think near the end of this interview, you'll get to hear about his take on the CHL pipeline and what that means for the league, for college hockey long term. And I think it's pretty eye-opening stuff from a guy who's really taken advantage of it more than any other coach. So yeah, I think you guys will really enjoy this interview.
Yeah. And I'll break the fourth wall here just for a sec. We had to cut like half of our interview because we had Dennis Williams for 40 minutes today, and he is so expansive in how he talks, and he's so passionate about the things that he says that we didn't have a chance to get into how were you able to keep every player, returning player,
right,
Year's team, or we didn't get a chance to ask him about Scooter, the famed equipment manager for Bowling Green as well. So,
do want to hear about Scoot, Dalton Norris episode,
yes,
back in November, he'll fill you in about Scoot.
Yeah, and we can.
I just think what I wanted to ask was the fact that he had Scoot as an equipment manager, and yeah, then what, like 2 decades later, he's back as a coach and he's still the equipment manager. I think that's just so cool. But
yeah,
but, you know, hats off to Scoot. I love getting the Scoot questions in because the Diamond Cutter is a staple at Bowling Green.
He's the best. He's the absolute best. So let's kick it to our interview with Dennis Williams. All right. We are joined by Bowling Green head coach Dennis Williams, one of two first-year but not-so-first-year coaches in the CCHA. and I think a good place to start is coming out of that just bananas series against Bemidji State. It was a wild one, and I don't know if I've seen splits as crazy as that one in my life before, but at the end of the day, you guys are unbeaten in your last 7 games, and it dates back to early December. So let's just start with what's been the biggest key to the success and just this recent run for you guys.
Yeah, I think it balances a lot. I think if you look at, teams that have success starts from the net out. Obviously, in this last stretch of games, Christian Stover's played really well for us and given us a chance to be in games and an opportunity to close out and win games. You mentioned the Bemidji State there, that overtime there on Saturday, I think was a display that I haven't seen in a number of years from a goaltender to keep you in it in overtime and the desperation, from that. But really, I think our group, it's... I think a lot of it is they're starting to come together, with a new coach, a new different philosophy maybe. And I think what a lot of people have to realize is when you have a new coach, it's a different voice in some different areas that you put an onus on and you want guys to play. And if you think about, them coming in this year, there's a lot of nerves. We have a lot of players on our team. There's a lot of battle for ice time. And I think it just took that long for them to finally maybe feel a little bit more comfortable with the systems, myself, you know, everyone like is gripping the stick. You know, we have six forwards sitting out right now, and you know, like, it just, it's hard, right? And you play the game of, you play not to, to make a mistake instead of just playing. And mm-hmm. I think what we've been able to do is just, you know, start to play without thinking, just enjoy it. And, you know, we've obviously had a nice little stretch here. We don't take it for granted because we know it can easily go the other way as well, you know? And so, but we're going to continue to learn from these games. And as I tell our guys, it's about peaking at the right time. It's about, you know, you can go through, you know, a whole season or three quarters of a season and have 2-3 losses and lose the wrong two games, you know? So mm-hmm. for us, all these opportunities we've had, like even, you know, against Bemidji, giving up 3 5-on-6 goals. Right, that's not a great taste from my standpoint, right? But, but if we can learn from it, I think I'll pay dividends in the stretch, because there's going to be another time, hopefully, we're in that situation where we don't panic and we can be successful with it. So that's how I've looked at it.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Christian Stover too. And I mean, he's one of the hottest goaltenders in the country right now. And the CCHA alone, it's kind of cool because it's 1-2-3 in save percentage right now. Stover's right there at the top. You got Alex Tracy below him and Josh Kotai third. So this league is just chock full of goaltenders. Mike Richter awards are coming out very soon. And I'm sure we could see Christian Stover's name on that list. He has a 947 save percentage and a 1.77 GAA in his junior season, or coming off a junior season. That was pretty tough for him. I mean, just his turnaround, what has kind of gone into it, that turnaround for him? He's gotten an opportunity here in these last few weeks and he's really run with it.
Yeah. And that's exactly it, right? Like it's, we have such a short season, you know, and we put him in. His first game back was against Michigan Tech. You know, he was out there for a bit for us. And he had to relieve himself partway through the third because of cramping, you know, like
Really?
And he couldn't, you know, and he couldn't. Yeah, so there's 8-9 minutes. You see that in the NHL too, you know, guys, and, you know, more and more, right? So I remember, like, that game there, we got outshot pretty bad to Michigan Tech, and we end up winning in overtime or shootout. I forget what exactly, maybe overtime. But then I remember Cole Moore having to go in with 8 minutes left, and we got a five-minute major. A five-minute major. But, you know, and opportunities come like that. You know, last year, Christian, you know, missed part of the season due to injury, and Cole Moore got his opportunity. So we fast forward to Northern. Unfortunately, Cole Moore was ill, you know, and, you know, Christian got in for the Friday and won and got in for the Saturday. We come back to RIT. I'm going with him again. We go into the Lake State. He wins 2 up there. Like, you know, it's taken, you know, taking the reins of your opportunity and run with it. You know, mm-hmm. we say that all the time, whether you're goalie, forward, or D. And in this case, I've always felt comfortable with both of them, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's Cole or Christian in that, you know. And I didn't really know Christian too well, you know, because he didn't get into his first game until, you know, December, right? Off it. So practices, you know, it's a little bit harder. We had Cole for the first part, but I feel really comfortable, guys, with both of those guys in net. They both, I think, have shown in their collegiate career that they can win you hockey games and contribute to your team success. So right now, really fortunate with both those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we'll get back to the team you got now, but we want to talk a little bit about your playing career as well. And you grew up in Stratford, Ontario, played for the Culletons in the MWJHL, where, you know, you had an interesting last year where you had 50 goals, 72 assists in 48 games, but you also had 196 penalty minutes.
Good God.
Those are probably all 10-minute misconducts.
What kind of player were you?
Yeah. I was probably still trying to figure out my identity as a player then too, you know, you know, but it was pretty neat to play in Stratford. Obviously a big pipeline of players come out of Stratford, you know, and a lot were coming to Bowling Green at that time. So I was really fortunate, you know, to have the opportunity. Buddy Powers, who helps us here right now on our staff, was my coach at the time, him and Wayne Wilson and Brian Hills, who are both at RIT. And, you know, it's just a hockey town. I obviously probably was a player the coach was frustrated with at times. You know, obviously I had a good some good line mates that helped me get some points, but I was probably on the other end taking some silly penalties, which, you know, knowing now I'm a coach, I don't know if I would have liked myself as a player maybe at the time. you know, it was just such a great experience. And my brother coaches the junior team now back home, Stratford. So it's really neat to, you know, have that. And we have, you know, good ties there. But it's a small town. You know, I came here to Bowling Green as a true freshman. You know, in hindsight, you know, I wish back then, like, I guess not everybody, but I was probably too young. You know, like everything happened so fast. Mm-hmm. If I could go back and relive it, I would have played a year of midget, but I went right from major bantam to junior, mm-hmm. you know, and played 3 years of junior. And, you know, at that time, there wasn't really a big discrepancy between that junior B league and the Toronto Provincial League. So I got to play at home, you know, live at home, go to high school, do all that. And then when I came to college, I think it was a real eye opener. I was the weakest on the team. You know, I was a true freshman. I didn't really get a chance to play power play, you know, not anything the coach did, my lack of doing, you know, and then I had to find a way to be a penalty killer. And, you know, I didn't block too many pucks in junior. I hate to say I you know, I wanted to possess the puck, you know, and score. But it's funny how it works. Right. So I was given the opportunity. I don't trade my path to come to Bowling Green at that age at all, because I met so many great teammates, so many great people, so many great coaches, which helped give me the love to become a coach, you know, off it. And so, but in hindsight, like, do you wish you could slow things down? That's what I really try to tell players now, like, dominate, you know, be at the level, like work came too quick for me. I graduated at 21, you know, and, you know, I went and played in the Odessa, I think, or Central League somewhere. And I only did that because I didn't want to work. But, you know, I started working at 22, like getting into the grad assistant. I kind of wish I was 25, you know, and doing what kids are doing now. But lesson learned. But it was a real good experience to play in my hometown.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that coaching career, because you did start fairly quick for you. And you were a GA at Bowling Green in 02, 03. And then you spent a year as an assistant at Utica College the following year in 03, 04. But then what's interesting is you had a 3-year stint as a college head coach at Newman, which included a runner up finish in the ECAC West in 06, 07. I mean, what do you take away from the experience in becoming a head coach at the collegiate level at that age?
Yeah, it was great. You know, and really the, when I coached at Utica, the best part about it, two best parts, I met my wife there, which was, should be my best part. And then the second best part was the head coach, Gary Heenan. He's actually the godparent to my youngest daughter. And he still coaches Utica. And they're a great team, Utica. And he taught me so much. A lot of tough love, you know, because if you're going to be a D3 coach, you do it all. Like, yeah. Right. You're taping sticks, you're sharpening skates, you might have to drive a Zamboni. You got to do it like everything right off it. And, but I had an opportunity to go to Newman, and I had players older than me on the team when I went there to coach, you know, off it. And we took a team that the year before, I think they only had one win or two wins. And we ended up getting, I don't know, 4 or 5 my first year. You know, we took it from there to 14 to 17 or 18, whatever it was, you know, and recruited a whole new team. And to this day, I'm on a chat with all those guys, and now they're married with kids. Right. And it's pretty funny because I think about how I coached then versus how I coach now, you know, and I just had two of them down from London. Mark Van Vliet and Eric Stojanovic both coached their kids' youth teams that they brought down for a game.
Oh, so sweet.
So I talked to their kids' teams, and here I am as their coach, and, you know, and it's pretty neat, you know, to say. But the path I took is so unorthodox, right? Like, it's not what – when you look at it, and I think I check every box of every league, probably in D3 college.
I was going to point that out. At some point in this interview, you have done it all.
Yeah. And you know what? I loved every minute of it. Truly, like every place I went. So I went from there to Huntsville, Alabama for 1 year with Danton Cole, not a really hockey hotbed, you know, off it. But I wanted to go learn from Danton, you know, he NHL coach, you know, he's NHL Stanley Cup. I enjoyed meeting him when he coached at Bowling Green as an assistant. And then I was, you know, given the opportunity to come back to BG under Scotty Pollock. And then I took 1 year as the interim coach. And then didn't get the job. And I remember sitting there with my wife. We just had our daughter. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to coach. but I knew I loved it. So I drove to Albert Lea, Minnesota. They had a team at the time in the North American League.
Yeah.
So they had a job opening. I'd left here Bowling Green. You know, most, you know, at the time, most teams will cover. I paid my own expense, drove all the way out there, put together a whole packet, you know, did my presentation. They offered me the job on the spot, you know. And then I was driving home and I was like, man, and on the way home, how it worked out was I got a call from a guy named Gary Jelena, and they just bought the Amarillo. Well, they just bought, I forget, Owatonna maybe, and moved him to Amarillo in the North America. So he was friends with Dave Ellett, who's a Bowling Green guy, you know, alumnus. So that's how I got connected. And I went down to Amarillo, Texas, you know, and I was like, I remember having my time thinking, that's the only job I can get right now is coaching in the Texas Panhandle. Like, I'm from, you know, Stratford, Ontario. Like, I can't get a job in Canada, you know, like the
yeah, right. Yeah.
But you know what? We did it. And it was awesome, guys. Like, I loved it in the Panhandle. Rick Matchett was the manager. I talked to him to this day. We have so many good friends down there. And then, lo and behold, the owner of that team bought the USHL team, Bloomington.
Yep.
So I went to Bloomington, started his team, and he owns the Everett Silvertips in the Western Hockey League. So it's funny how if I didn't take that job in Amarillo, Texas, I don't know if I'd ever coach in the USHL or get to coach in the Western Hockey League or coach the World Juniors. So it's funny the path it takes you. At the time, I felt like, what am I doing, questioning every decision I made? But in hindsight, it turned out to be one of the best decisions I ever made.
Yeah, and you stuck around in Everett, or in, you know, just major junior hockey for a decade too. I mean, after kind of bouncing around, you know, from place to place, it, I guess just what made you stick in Canada for a decade, and just how formidable was that time period for your coaching career and getting back to the NCAA ranks?
Yeah, you know, like that's a different league, you know, than what it was in the USHL, you know, in the North American League, in the sense that you have to live by a draft up there. And that was my first job I ever took where I wasn't the GM as well. So I worked under a general manager, Gary Davidson, one of the best in the game. Used to own Salmon Arm back in the day. He's now the GM of Calgary Hitmen in the Western Hockey League. Mm-hmm. But what a great mentor for me to go in and learn under, you know, in that sense. What I learned quickly is you have to have a good relationship with your general manager, you know, and not just a working, but you have to respect his decision, which I always did. But you want to have a good friendship as well away from the rink, because you got to work hand in hand. He has to go get the players. He has to make trades for players. And then I got to, you know, make them better and get them to buy in. Right. So that was really important to me, was when I took that job, was being able to work with Gary, because I thought he's just top notch. And, but my time there, it taught you a different way, because, you know, you are dealing with some high end first round picks, you know, you deal with different, you know, I don't want to say not issues, but you deal with different, hassles, in the sense of more agents are involved, you know, you live by a draft, you trade picks, you do a, it's like a mini, you know, NHL, you know, kind of from a business management. So I really got into that side of it. And then after COVID, they asked me to be the general manager as well. And during my time as GM coach, I hired a really good assistant GM, Mike Fraser, who's now the general manager. But, you know, we had a really good rapport, and he knew what I was looking for in a player. And you have to have that there. And you can't wave from it. You know, if you're building a strong culture and a strong program, you have to have an understanding and a conviction of what you want and how you want to build. And you got to stick true to it. So it taught me a lot. It was a lot of games. And, you know, I enjoyed my time there. We won a lot of games. We moved a lot of players on to the National Hockey League, a lot of players drafted, which is what you're there to do, you know, at the end of the day. And I remember having a talk quick, guys. I did a call with a coaching group. I forget what province, but I remember saying I would give up 10 wins every year to have one more kid drafted, you know? And yeah. I had another coach on that call say, I'll take your 10 wins, Willie.
I mean,
you know, and I really agree with that. Like, we're in a league there, and no different here. First thing I want to do is find out what our players, how can I help them and my staff? You know, like, you know, when I get to a place, it's like, you know, you can't stay there forever. You know, like, And my time in Everett, to me, just kind of came. And they're one of the best teams in the CHL, top in the Western League. I made a trade a few years ago for Zellweger and we ended up winning the lottery last year with Landon DuPont, you know, the generational defenseman who they're loaded, Everett. And yeah. I always say people is like most times you leave and you leave it low, right? But for me, I feel like all the programs I left, I've left it at a high. And people say I'm crazy for that. You know, like, hey, be selfish, go in there, trade all the picks, make a run for it. But that's not who I am. And I'm glad and I'm so happy they're having success. Those players are having success. I'd be more upset if they weren't, because then that means I left it in a worse spot than what I got there. So right. I, and that's kind of how I operate.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to, you had a World Junior stint too, as an assistant in 2022, head coach in 2023. I mean, you got to coach players like Connor Bedard, Adam Fantilli, Dylan Gunther, Shane Wright, Logan Stankoven. I mean, so many more. How did these experiences, sort of shape your coaching career for what ultimately was sort of to come?
Yeah, it was really fortunate. I got into Hockey Canada my first year there coaching the under-17s. And Canada used to have three teams go. And, I grew up, as a Canadian hockey player, and you watch the World Juniors every day at Christmas, or on Boxing Day, right? Like all the way through. And so I just kind of put in my time, there and had the opportunity to, and it's funny how things work. I worked the Hlinka for a couple of years. One year was COVID, so we didn't have it. We won, I think we had silver when we played over there, and that team was pretty good, like with Quentin Byfield, Jamie Drysdale, Maverick Bork. Like we had basically those World Junior kids, just younger. And it's funny how it works. So I got offered the World Junior assistant job in the summer because my former assistant, Mitch Love, he got offered a job in the American Hockey League to coach at the time, the Wranglers. They were down in California, the Calgary Flames. They're now up there, but they're American League team, And so he went and coached there, and Andre Tourigny left to go to the NHL. And so at that time, Hockey Canada had to hire a head coach and a new assistant. So what they did was they hired Dave Cameron, who was this year's head coach, and they offered me the assistant job. During the time they offered me that assistant job, I had a pro offer I was weighing in on. Mm-hmm. And they came in the same week, like the same 3 days kind of. I was like, holy smokes. I remember talking to my wife about it. And I just remember saying to her, she's like, what do you think? I said, well, we love it in Everett right now. To be a part of the Canadian World Junior staff, coach the best in the world, that's kind of neat, So I just said it'd be something my parents would think it would be really, really neat to do because they grew up their whole lives watching it. So we stayed in Everett. And when I say we stuck in Everett, it wasn't a bad thing. I wasn't looking to leave at any time because I enjoyed my time there. But so we did that. COVID hit that year for the winter one. So we had the summer one in Edmonton and we won there. McTavish knocked it out of the air. But it just goes to show how hard the tournament is. Like it's not, it's the hardest, most stressful tournament. I say that when I left on my debrief. So mind you, so we won that. They quickly turned because we have the tournament in December. So they offered me in October to go back and be the head coach in Halifax. So I'm like, yeah, this is great. Like I was so nervous, excited. We lose game one, 5-1 to Czechia in Halifax. My daughter probably thought I was getting fired.
I remember you telling me this.
it was hard. I was like, what is going on? You question everything, right? Like in your own head, but it's about, winning the right games, peaking at the right time, similar, right? Like you can go 3-0, like you see what Sweden's done at the World Juniors, right? They win you got to just win three games at the right time, the quarters. Yeah. But you look at how hard the tournament is, and it goes into this year, like how I think unfairly, a lot of the coaches and players were critiqued up there because it's not an easy tournament. Like you look at even in the game against with Finland and US, like Finland's up there, like everything's going one way and it's a one gamer. And you look at some of the goals that went in that were kind of, you don't want to say flukes, but pretty unfortunate for the teams. And I go back to that year, we beat Slovakia in the quarterfinals in overtime. Bedard scores an unbelievable goal. They had the goalie from Chippewa who went to Green Bay. I forget his name, but like, Like, and I'm not, but that's a goalie playing in the North American League against the top CHL, and shots are 45 to 15 and you're losing. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's hockey.
Yeah, like I could easily have been lost in the quarters. Then we play US in the semis, and we call two controversial calls we call against them for goalie interference into the crease. And in IHF rules, one they scored on, if I would have lost that challenge, you know, that goal would have counted and they would have went on the power play. And we know how potent US power play can be, right? So you go through that wave, and then you get to the finals, you're playing Czechia, it's shots are same 2-1, it's 2-0 with 6 minutes left, and their second goal goes off Del Mastro's knee going wide, and then it's 2-2 going to overtime. You know, what just happened, right? But you know, I wouldn't want it any other way, because having to deal with the media after a loss to Czechia, I've never dealt with, and especially at a World Juniors in Canada. So I figured if I can handle that, I can handle almost any type of a media out there, because it's not easy, you know, because of the expectations, you know, and being at home. So really grateful for that opportunity. It was unbelievable teams, unbelievable players, unbelievable event, you know. And you know, I sit there and think back to it, my wife, my two girls came to all of it, my mom, my dad, my stepmom, my mother, father-in-law. It was just such a good family event for everybody.
I gotta ask, because when you say dealing with the Canadian media like that, is there a question that sticks out that you think back is, man, that was probably one of the more ridiculous questions I've ever been asked in that experience?
Well, where we got like kind of questioned hard was because we had in that first game against Czechia, you know, you had Bedard and Fantilli both tried the Michigan, right? In the same game, you know, and obviously Canada's identity and brand is not.
No.
Right. But there's still creativity to the game, right? So we get like, I had to answer those questions, you know, right after, you know, off it. And, but one thing I'll tell you is the guys in that locker room, when we lost that game, like we were beyond embarrassed. You know what I mean? Like it was like a light switch. There was so much talk prior to that event of the greatest World Junior team maybe assembled and all these guys. And, you know, you start reading too much about yourself and your team, and we forget that we have an opponent. And in that case, we lose to Czechia, who went undefeated till the finals. You know, you can see what they've done in the last 2 or 3 years as well. Like they've had, you know, arguably top three team in the last 2-3 World Junior and 3 World Juniors. So I think the loss was probably the hard reset in hindsight we needed. You know, and it kind of rewired us like, hey, we're not that good. We still got to, we just don't put on our skates and win here. We got to go grind this out, and we got to play to an identity. And it was unbelievable. Our leaders bought in right away for me. You know, staff was great. And, you know, we didn't look back. And to win back-to-back golds there, you know, it's, well, you see how hard it is. Like, I know US just did it, you know, with their staff. And I'm sure they'll tell you too, like, you know, do you go back for a 3-peat, but sometimes I was told you just take your 2 and go, because they can easily turn quickly. And if you don't medal, you're only known as your last one. So all joking aside, it was unbelievable experience, and one that I'm forever grateful for.
Yeah. And we're going to fast forward quite a bit here to obviously this season. And you know, you're back at the collegiate level, which means you're back to the recruiting era of college hockey, and it's a much, much different than it was in your first run. And when, you know, with the CHL players giving the green light to, you know, open their recruitment to NCAA programs, I mean, Bowling Green has gotten to work. I mean, by my count, you have 7 CHL players committed already. And I just got to ask, do you feel like your coaching experience and your history, you know, in the WHL, did that kind of give you a leg up going into this process of the CHL, you know, recruits?
Yeah, great question. And obviously coaching in the Canadian Hockey League, you know, helped. You know, you always go to the, you know, to the fishing holes where you catch fish, you know, and one thing for myself, I've coached at all the levels, North American League,
US. Yeah,
I got my fishing rod in a lot of them out there.
You know the lay of the land of all these lakes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously that the one thing we did was there was lots of talk in the summer on it, right? Lots of anticipation of what's going on. And there was talks last year in the GM meetings I was in, you know, in the CHL and the Western Hockey League. We started watching games right away, you know, and getting ahead of everything in anticipation that this might go down. And if it didn't, it didn't, you know, but we weren't giving up still coaching the other league, recruiting the other league. So for me, obviously having, you know, a connection, having, you know, coach that many years in Everett and opening up doors to the general managers, because it is an uncharted territory for a lot, you know, when I wouldn't know, I could only imagine what it was like that first call for a school to a CHL GM and how it went down, you know, like right. Waiting after a game, right? Where when you're in the USHL, they all know, you know, what they're here for. You can go down and say hi to that coach. Like when I was in the USHL and you get done the showcase in Pittsburgh, like every college team's there, right? So you're just going down saying hi to them. Who can I get for you? You know, like, yeah. And it's a little bit different, obviously, in the CHL. But the one thing I will say is that, you know, my experience of talking to CHL teams and of other colleges talking to them is, you know, there's been a really good rapport back and forth. But it would be naive to think that's the only league we recruit or going to recruit as well, because there's so many good hockey players all around, you know, and for us moving forward, we have to make sure we're doing our due diligence. Like, cause one thing we want our players to be is hard and aggressive on pucks. We got to be hard and aggressive as well as coaches, you know? So we have to, you know, start, you know, getting to, you know, midget hockey, junior hockey at all levels, because we can't leave any stone unturned. We have to be the hardest working staff. If not, then let's not talk to our players about being the hardest working team. You know, right. Unfortunately, we as coaches, maybe this is me coming out of the CHL. We work 7 days a week right now, every day till the end of the season. You know, that's our job and that's our onus to not only our players, but to our athletic department, our president, our boosters, our alumni, everybody, our university. We owe it to them because we get to coach this great game. They're giving us our livelihood to coach hockey. So we got to empty the tank as coaches right back and make sure we're doing our job. So we're heavily recruiting, you know, we're kind of changing our different identity and brand, you know, off it, but it's definitely, the landscape's totally different. I got thrown into that deep end off the high dive, you know, and I don't know if my head's above water yet, you know, from it. I'm not sure if it's good, bad, or indifferent yet. You know what I mean? I think it's going to take a few years probably for everything to probably just, you know, kind of level out, you know, off it. Like, I think what a lot of people look at the CHL, it's the new, probably shiny league, you know, but again, there's a lot of different leagues in the US that are great, different leagues in Canada, different leagues in Europe. You see how many kids are coming over. Like, that's the one thing I noticed when I came back was the amount of European players since then.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Tons.
Oh yeah.
Like tons.
Look at Michigan Tech. Tech is well known for bringing those guys over, and then they suddenly are, you know.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like, even us, like, we have a lot of different nationalities represented here in BG. And, you know, in the CHL, you have your import draft where you get two players you can pick, you know, and that's all you get on your team. Otherwise, they're Canadian or Americans, right? And I come here, and I'm looking through rosters, you know, like you said, playing Tech or North, whoever. And you're like, wow, look at this guy, like, you know, but the world of recruiting is open up so much. And, you know, we got to find you got to find your niche, you know, and kind of, and back in the day, Bowling Green used to be in Stratford until Dennis Williams came through and the well dried out. Yeah, it probably should have stopped a few years earlier, I told them.
I do want to follow up on that, though, because you mentioned it. I mean, there's plenty of speculation about what opening up this pipeline will eventually do long term. Where do you see college hockey heading in that regard, and how do you feel like this will impact the sport long term? Is it good or bad? I mean, more so than anything.
I don't know yet. You know, like, you know, we opening up the CHL has helped Bowling Green right now, because that's an area I know well of. If you look at USHL, a lot of kids get committed early there, right? There's not a lot, you know. North American League, same thing. They do a great job producing, you know. Where we are at, probably in the CCHA and us being Bowling Green, is you're looking for the 19, 20-year-old to come in, you know, and then I look at the ages always, you know, like the average age for teams, you know, I was looking at it yesterday. I think youngest is Denver and Michigan State, maybe, you know,
the two like top five teams in the country.
Exactly. And the rest of us are like 2.5 years on average older, or three, you know, off it. So I think time will tell, you know, how it's going. You know, I the college game, what brought me back was it's to me, college hockey is still meant to be in the purest form. Yeah. Right? And we're having a lot of NCAA decisions, right, that have kind of revamped and changed that. But the best part to me was when I committed here to like Buddy Powers, I remember coming on my visit and his word was as good as any contract. He shook my hand. I was 15 years old at the time, or 16, you know, like with my dad and my stepmom at the time, going to his house. And I'm like, this is where I want to go, you know? And it was as simple as that. And never once in my life did I think throughout my 4 years that I would ever transfer or be asked to kind of be pushed out, you know? And, and probably based off of my numbers, he would have a legitimate to try to push me out, but it was never that, right? Like, you know, and it's just it's totally different, you know, when you look at it, because when he said to me, you're good, here's, you know, your scholarship. Great. You know, you didn't think anything of it. And when teams would come to Stratford at the time to recruit me still, because at the time there wasn't a ton of internet, so you didn't know, you know, like you couldn't go onto a site and see, or kids now put out, you know, I'm going up or Instagram, right? So teams would show up after and be like, hey, can I talk to Dennis Williams? I come out like, hey, how are you doing? And they're like, hey, I'm from school XYZ. Oh, I've committed to Bowling Green. Hey, that's great. Congrats, kid. Tell Buddy we said hi.
Right.
You know, like there was no more, right? But we now live in not just hockey, but all sports. Like until they get to campus, you don't know what you're getting. You don't know.
Yeah.
A kid could be driving to Bowling Green in August and take a hard right, you know? And I don't know. So that's the part that I don't know, you know, if I agree with, because the one thing with college was it was still the purest amateur side. But we have to run our program with what is now provided the opportunity and the confinements of the NCAA rules and changes, right? So we have to change with the times, just like we do with coaching. We got to continue to improve our coaching and stay up with the way the game's played. And we're trying to put in a style of play that is intuitive to pro hockey, because at the end of the day, kids still come to college, A, for their degree, and B, a chance to be a pro after. So we have to train them like that. We have to coach them like that, play a system like that, so that if they're given that opportunity, they'll have greater success.
Cool. Yeah, so we got three more for you, but they're all going to be quicker questions.
Oh, worries. They're quick ones. This is what we wrap up. They're called one hitters. So
we ask this to everybody that comes on the show, players or coaches. So the first one is, and it might be, you haven't been everywhere in the CCHA yet this year, but you have plenty of experience going around in the CCHA. So we'll open it up to college hockey, but where is the toughest place you've ever played and coached in college hockey?
Okay. Played. Oh, well, when I played, Michigan was always hard in the old CCHA, you know, with them, you know, the crowd, you know, in regards to that coaching wise, I'll just stick to all the CCHA teams. Like, coaching was always the old Miami rink was always hard to play in. Down there. Now they got the new one, right? Like I say new, but it's a, you know, hour old, but I think back in the day, like the rinks of going into Notre Dame was hard. Mm-hmm. They played such an honest game, you know, and you knew what you're getting. It was going to be a 3-2. They're going to be heavy, hard on you. But, you know, like, I think for me, always as a player, those games were so fun. The crowds were electrifying, right? They had the bands going off it. And you know, in terms of this year, like, again, we were out in Mankato, tough rink to play in. You know, I look forward to going up to Bemidji. Like, I know they built a new rink since I've been in it, and like photos of it and whatnot. So, I think on any given night, they can be really difficult.
For sure. Who's what about the most talented player? We've said some names. Who's the most talented player you've ever coached?
In college or
anywhere?
Anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of tough, like, right? Like your world juniors, yeah. you coach some yeah. all-world players.
Yeah, I'll keep the world junior because you got obviously Bedard and you got Gunther and Bork mm-hmm. and these guys, right? And Owen Power, mm-hmm. you know, Gooley, like you can go on and on. Probably Olin Zellweger in Everett I had since he was 15, the defenseman in Anaheim, played mm-hmm. world juniors 2 years with us. Pretty prolific player, high-end skill, you know, off it. I had Dustin Wolf in Everett. I'd like to say I probably had to stay out of his way as a goalie and let our goalie guy deal with him. And he deserves all the credit, James Jensen there. But, you know, Connor Dewar was a great player too. He's with the Maple Leafs
mm-hmm.
you know, often, and he's from the Paw, Manitoba, way up there, you know, and just such great stories. Right? But like having those players to at the age of 15, 16 and see where, you know, how they evolved in 4 years and now playing in the NHL, it's pretty neat to watch.
Last one we got for you. You might have an answer that'll finally beat Aaron Trotter when we asked him who is the most famous person in your cell phone.
Oh. Probably
Jerry Yort.
Well, they Wayne Gretzky's in there.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, that's because of the World Juniors. So I caught a break when you're in that, you know.
He's definitely got. Well, Trotter had Connor Bedard, and so we've been telling everybody, like, I don't know if you're going to top Aaron's.
You probably have Connor Bedard too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you got Bedard too.
Like all the World Junior guys, but it's you know, you don't bother them. You had to call them a couple times prior to the tournament. I have to make sure my daughter doesn't get on my phone. And
yeah, Dad, that's the one. And, you know, how's Wayne doing?
Yeah, but that was really neat. Like, you know, to have a guy like him reach out, you yeah. know, during and after the tournament, you know, and he played in Brantford, you know, and he was telling me sure. my dad members watch him in junior. And we were going back and forth about the Stratford Carltons because he played them back in the day, mm-hmm. you know, when he was in Brantford. But, you know, you just talk about what a class act and from, you know, like a person myself growing up and idolizing him and know what he's done for the game was pretty neat to get. To get that. And I will say too, like when we lost to Czechia, the amount of coaches that would reach out after that game to give support, National Hockey That's League awesome. Coaches, you know, like it means a lot, you know, because you, when you lose those type of games, you're kind of in a quiet spot by yourself. And mm-hmm. so, right. but yeah. And anyhow, it, he'd probably be the, from a yeah, standpoint, having his number in there. I don't plan to ever text him or call him. It was pretty special to get a message from him.
That's awesome.
Well, that's all we got for you. Thank you.
Pretty yeah, easy, Dennis. Guys. I was expecting a few more zingers maybe from you. A little nervous.
Well, we know you got somewhere to be, but we appreciate you coming on here, Coach Williams. And it's been great to watch you guys. Best of luck to you guys as the season continues on. And this Bowling Green team has been a lot of fun to watch. So we appreciate you coming on and chatting with us a little bit.
Well, Jared and Trent, thanks for taking the time and the kind words. And I enjoyed our 40 plus minutes together. It's always good talking hockey. And thank you guys for what you do for the game of hockey as well. It's your energy, your to be able to put this on and it's the best sport in the world. And mm-hmm. I know sometimes, you know, a simple act of gratitude, I always say, needs to always be told out there, you know, often. And you guys are, you know, the meat and potatoes behind giving out the information and, you know, and for what you guys do, I really applaud you. So thanks for everything. I enjoyed our talk. If you ever need to chat again, I love talking hockey. Feel free to give me a call.
Will do.
Appreciate thanks. It, Coach.
All right. Once again, thank you to Dennis Williams for joining the show. Subscribe to the CCHA show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And subscribe to the CCHA on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter at Trent Singer, at Jared Urbato BP. You can check out our work at BemidjiPioneer.com and SiouxFallsLive.com.